get to know you better.
Well, I'm popular, confident, non-freakish. Everything you're not. And if you insist on traipsing after me, could you at least wear a higher quality perfume?
Okay, enough. Nothing is worth this. I don't care what happens to me.
Libby!
Oh, no.
I turned her into a puzzle!
For ages 3 and up?
I'm just a girl.
Ladies, gentlemen, Team Knight Rider, welcome to episode number 38 of Sabrina's Witch Trials. This is the show, of course, where each episode we venture back into the mid-1990s to rewatch, review, and reminisce all about everyone's favorite Friday Night Spellfest, Sabrina the Teenage Witch. I'm Alex Adeluju, and listeners, I hope you're ready, because on this episode, Sabrina's inability to work with others leads Libby to fall to pieces. It's 5 easy pieces of Libby. And, of course, one of the quintessential Sabrina episodes, definitely one of the quintessential Season 2 episodes, so in order to talk about it, I need to bring back one of the quintessential guests here on the Witch Trials, noted child of the 80s, Phil Adeluju's back. Phil, always good to talk to you. How are you doing?
Al, always a pleasure to be on.
Good. You know, I do like how, like, I have this intro for you and Chris that makes it feel like we're not brothers and sister.
Like, I know, like, like you've picked me off some kind of magical Instagram site that you follow of children of the 80s.
Like that, or
not like...
Not like,
you know, we're blood or anything.
Yeah, or like you're like a marketer at some like New York firm, and it's like you just happen to be stopping by my podcast. Like, no, I've known you my entire life. But yes, Mr. Phil Adeluju is here, and welcome, Mr. Phil.
Well, thank you.
Phil, before we get into the show...
You can just call me Phil. You don't have to call me Mr., please.
This episode, of course, very puzzle-centric, and before we get into the episode itself, are you much of a puzzle person?
No.
No?
I've received puzzles before when I was younger. Mm-hmm. I actually received a puzzle for Christmas this year, and I think I haven't even opened it yet, so...
Is it one of those 3D puzzles? Because those are actually kind of cool.
No, I think it's a puzzle of New York. It's like a New York puzzle.
Oh, where you're from?
Where I'm from, yes, born and raised.
Is that what it's like now that you're living in Ohio? And I mean, you've been living there for 15 years almost.
Cue the Fresh Prince theme, except that's in Philadelphia.
That sure is.
No, but sometimes you have to kind of explain, like, you're from New York. And most people, I mean, some people would say, like, oh, we're in New York.
Yeah. Most people are like, oh, so what's it like living inside the Empire State Building?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So, like, does everybody, like, eat bagels every day?
Pretty much,
answer,
actually.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
really do.
Yes, we do.
I've got 3 sitting in my kitchen right now. yeah, I've never been a huge puzzle person either. I just find them stressful because, like, once you dump all those pieces out and they're just sitting there, it's like, this is going to be 6 hours of my life.
I mean, I just don't have the patience for it.
Yeah.
I really don't.
But luckily, you have the patience for talking about episodes of Sabrina the Teenage Witch, something which is even more stressful than a puzzle.
I have all day.
That's true. So, of course, Phil, an old pro at this that you are, you know that I asked you to describe the episode that we just watched in a set number of words. This time, I'm going to need 10 words from you to describe 5 easy pieces of Libby. And if you hear a cat in the background, that's the cat.
Well, Al, I'm prepared today for this. No editing needed.
This guy is always right on the ball. Let me hear it,
yes,
Phil.
All right. So the 10 words are, Sabrina learns that she needs compassion when dealing with Libby.
Very, very good. You worked the word compassion in there.
I did.
A nicely structured sentence and utterly true. Sabrina, shockingly to many longtime listeners of the show, is a bit of a bitch in this episode and a bit, you know, self-focused. Not compassionate, as you say, but there is some growth that happens. So let's get into that.
Or as we call it, just being Sabrina.
That's true. Just a regular day in the life of this teenage witch. I resisted the urge to say bitch. Yes, very good.
Oh.
Phil said it. That's right. All the chains are off. In the kitchen, Phil, Zelda comes in with a eureka moment as she's cracked an anti-allergy formula that she's been working on, and apparently it involves the very special ingredient of ostrich saliva.
The hard part is getting them to drool.
Hilda wants to see the bubbling beaker for some reason, and immediately knocks it out of Zelda's hands, sending it crashing to the floor, which in turn brightens and whitens the entire kitchen. They comment on how the formula cleaned everything before realizing that it did the same thing to a now white Salem. He comments on being a blonde and how his IQ just dropped 20 points before Zelda points out that the three witches in the room are all blondes and says that he's dead as he runs away and we go to the open.
I'm blonde. My IQ just dropped 20 points.
Blonde, blonde, blonde. Dead.
See ya.
Phil, I thought a bit of a fun opening here. I think there's some actually pretty simplistic when you think about it, but like still effective camera work done here where they like darken the screen and then brighten it once the beaker hits so that it does actually look brighter and whiter.
Yeah, I think actually for an opening, it was a good one because it actually had to do with the story.
Mm-hmm.
So where you usually have some of those weird ones where they're, you know, you're like, this has nothing to do with the story. This one actually did. So I was actually pretty surprised with it. And you're right. There was some good camera work with the, like you said, the darkening and brightening.
This is what I love Sabrina to be. You know, I do love practical effects, and this is, again, a practical visual effect that just, like, is very effective, and you didn't have to use CGI or anything. You just play with the brightness levels of the camera and of the lights and everything, and it really does sell that everything is cleaner than it was a moment ago. If you remember, Phil, when Zelda does come in, Sabrina is making her breakfast. And if I was Zelda, I would be furious because Hilda and Sabrina have fucked this kitchen up to no end. I mean, part of it has to be that it's dirty so that it can then be cleaned in a few minutes. But there's just like food all over the place. There's empty plates and cups all over the place. There's half a melon just sitting on the counter that no one is eating and it's going to go bad. And most egregiously, and this infuriated me, I don't know if anyone else notices this, but like Sabrina is actually like preparing toast and she puts far too much jelly on a piece of toast, by the way. Like Salem asks for the rest of her toast and he's right too because it's just covered in jelly. Like, he's going to die of a small cat stroke, but that's besides the point. But she puts jelly on the toast and then walks to the kitchen table to sit down and leaves the knife just sitting on the counter.
I mean, you know, he did say that she was a blonde, so.
Honestly, what a blonde moment. Like, I was fucking furious. I wanted to just scream at her to clean something up because it was like, There's an open jar of jelly. Just leave it sitting in the jar, Sabrina. Be a human being for once in your fucking life.
What'd you think about Whiteface Salem?
I like it. I think it's actually a really effective way to like get across that magic has just happened. It is stark, mm-hmm. and like they did cast the perfect like beautiful white cat. Like it is immaculately white. It looks like the damn thing was bleached.
I mean, it kind of looked like the one from like the freaking food commercial. What is that? Which one is that? The cat food commercial?
Fancy Feast?
Yes, like where they give them like the little like crystal like, you know, goblet for them to eat out of. It looked like that level of white cat.
Yeah. But I think it, like I said, it does look really stark and effective, and it's a cute cat also. And the funny thing about the cat is when Zelda is like, oh, we're all blondes and you're dead. Salem like walks off of the counter and towards the camera and jumps off the counter. But like the deadline gets a laugh, but after like the laugh dies down, but before the intro kicks in, you just hear Nick Bakay goes, see ya, like under his breath. And it's the most hilarious mm-hmm. thing to me because it gets no laughter because the laughters have already died down. But it's just like a little toss in thing like gets done right before. And it's like, it's so much of an afterthought. It's fucking hilarious.
See ya.
Speaking of looks and hair in this scene, Phil, what did you think of Sabrina's Bo Derek look?
You mean the Rastafarian cornrows that she was trying to go for?
Yeah, she's been listening to an awful lot of UB40.
Well, I guess not Rastafarian. I guess it would be more cornrows, more, you know, Tupac kind of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. I thought it was terrible. I mean,
I don't think it was her best look.
It was not a good look. Was not a good look for her.
No. I think, look, it definitely was a look for white girls in the 90s. Just like all girls, but like white girls were wearing this hairstyle in the 90s. I don't think it looks awful, but like she has had much better looking hair. Like even in the Christmas episode we did not too long ago, her hair looked fucking gorgeous in that. And I mean, it is two different looks, but this one, the more I saw it this episode, the more I was like, maybe something else.
I mean, for those of you who ever been like on a Caribbean cruise, this literally looks like when you come off the boat, there's like a bunch of vendors waiting out there just doing like, just literally that's all they do to white girls' hair is do that style of hair.
Show everyone where you've been by getting your hair
exactly.
done.
Exactly. I mean, that's literally what it looked like. I mean, if she was just like, maybe like red burnt, I'd be like, oh, she went on a Caribbean cruise.
In Westbridge, we were actually in the Westbridge Lantern office. Mrs. Quick reads out a postcard from a missing Valerie, who notes that she's enjoyed all of Washington's landmarks, including a bunch of really sad attractions.
I visited the Vietnam Memorial, the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, and JFK's grave. This place is really fun.
Miss Quick then gives the group some good news that the school is entering afloat in the town's Democracy Days celebration, and she asks for one of the students to be in charge of it. Both Libby and Sabrina volunteer, worrying Mrs. Quick, until she takes a good hard look at Valerie's postcard of the Capitol building and gets the idea to put both of them in charge, a la the country's two-party system. Later, outside of class, Sabrina tries to give Libby her idea for the float, that being displaying the headlines of the Westbridge Lantern on recycled paper. But Libby points out that the newsprint would rub off on the cheerleaders' uniforms, and of course they're going to be on the float because they're always on the front page. Logical. Back at home, Hilda marvels at how clean the kitchen is. Salem throws in a Howard Hughes reference.
This house is so spotless and germ-free, Howard Hughes could live here.
Hilda suggests that Zelda should market the formula as a cleaner. Salem then oddly takes a weird shot at the FDA, but Hilda says they can still sell the formula in the other realm, which apparently is totally lax on regulations. Zelda is totally against this, as she developed the formula to end suffering, though this allows Hilda to break out some of her stand-up routine about toilet bowls.
I made this formula to cure allergies and end suffering, not to whiten.
You ever cleaned a toilet? That's suffering!
Adding that Zelda's formula doesn't even work for curing allergies. This pisses off Zelda, who then leaves, adding that this kind of negativity is why Pasteur broke up with Hilda. Once she's gone, Salem and Hilda just agree about Zelda's tremendous integrity before Hilda immediately decides that they should go about stealing her formula.
You gotta hand it to Zelda. She's a pillar of integrity.
Yeah. Let's steal her formula.
Back at the float preparations, or at the float preparations, Libby starts laying down the law about who's in charge to the other workers, while Sabrina points out that they're supposed to both be working together. Libby says that she'll be using me as code for we when giving instructions, adding that she has the design for the float in her head already. And Sabrina says that she's just glad to hear that Libby's butt is working, adding that Sabrina's code for Libby's head is her butt, because that's where her brain is. Back at home, Hilda and Salem are looking for Zelda's formula. They set about looking for it in the dining room, and Salem sets about fixing the one big issue with their plan. Its code name.
Operation Find the Allergy Formula that also cleans, don't get caught, and make a lot of money is underway.
You start looking, and I'll start working on a shorter code name.
We then go back to the float preparation, where Harvey pops out from underneath the float, surprising Sabrina, and adding that he's tuning up the engine and that it'll be able to go 90. But Sabrina just worries about the World War II veterans that'll be standing in front of it. She then starts decorating with crepe paper, which, shockingly, Libby comes over and immediately tears up, saying that she's sorry, but that she thought they wanted the float to look nice, before pausing for a second and then giving Sabrina a jackass of a smirk in some beautiful condescension there by Libby.
Libby, we agreed this would be my side.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we wanted the float to look nice.
Phil.
Yes, sir.
Let's go back to the Westbridge Lantern office. Is it...
Before that, sir.
Oh, forgive me. It is
Come on. How can you forget my segment, Al?
I always forget, and I never should, because it's one of everyone's favorite segments. Of course, it's now time for Phil's Costume Corner.
The opening.
Phil.
Yes, sir.
Walk us through the outfit that Sabrina is wearing in the opening credits this week.
So, in the opening credits, Sabrina is wearing a Flappers 20 style getup.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember what she says, Al?
Oh, this, it had something to do with the word flap. Isn't it like, where's the flap?
Ah, close. You're very close. What's all the flap?
Terrible. Literally, this feels like one of the ones where they were just like, all right, Melissa, we trust you. Just say something related to your outfit. And she fell flat on her face. Flap on her face.
What a flap.
Just awful. Good outfit, though, I thought, but just like no line whatsoever to go with it.
No, it was just completely like, literally, I think the costume definitely came before the line here.
Absolutely.
What's all the flap?
But, you know, at the Lantern office, Mrs. Quick gets the idea for Sabrina and Libby to work together by looking at Valerie's postcard. I appreciate the fact that they bothered to explain why Lindsay Sloan isn't in, like, a fourth straight episode or something, but...
It was just amazing. Like she, like, longed at it. Like,
yes.
Like, there was this longing look of, like, let me just stare at this.
This'll fix
everything. And then, like, the shot came closer. It's like, America.
Yeah.
That's what I'll do.
No offense.
America.
But...
And then she talked about the two-party system.
Yeah.
Which is not true, because our country, lovely as it is, has many parties.
It's not just two.
There's two centralist parties that dominate, I guess, the political scene.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's multiple parties.
Also, it occurred to me, but like... If you're trying to get something done effectively and quickly, do you really want to model your, like, directive model on the two-party system?
The bureaucracy of the two-party system.
Honestly, it's literally the House of Congress. It's like, nothing gets done well or quickly there.
Well, yes, we'll go ahead and push this through the two-party system.
Also, we're going to have Harvey...
Where everything comes down to three votes.
We're going to have Harvey serve as Supreme Court Justice... And,
oh, God.
Let's see, Speaker of the House will be Gordy.
No, he's definitely, the Secretary of Transportation. He was back down there, you know, Perfect. Getting things done.
He's Steve Mnuchin at Treasury.
Al, what did you think about, basically the Democracy Days?
Oh, my God. Listen, I have no problem celebrating democracy. I think it's a wonderful thing. I have a profound problem with you spelling days, D-A-Z-E.
When I first saw it on the board, like I had to rewind it a couple of times, mm-hmm. and I'm like, that's not the same connotation that you're trying to go for here.
I think you've made a mistake here.
You've made a serious mistake here, teacher.
There's just too much democracy. We're in a daze.
Oh man, I'm high on democracy.
Hit me with some of that free elections.
What did you think about Harvey's dad's Grenada stories?
Honestly, this is one of the times when it would be really great to meet Harvey's dad again and
to tell you about the 48-hour invasion of Grenada.
That and like how Harvey's a huge letdown to him and you know.
Harvey, let me tell you about the time I was on that boat for 14 hours while they invaded Grenada.
Okay, but then can I go, like, have actual fun? Nope. Go kill a bug. Let's talk about Sabrina's concept for a float also, because I thought it was actually pretty stupid.
I've got a great idea for the float. I say we display some of our major headlines using recycled newspaper.
I mean, I literally sat there and thought to myself, you know, if I were Libby, I'd probably tell her she's an idiot too.
I mean, here's the thing. It's a good idea if what you're representing is just the newspaper office, but it's not. It's the whole school. And
literally, yes, exactly. The whole school is being represented. Like, this float is for Westbridge. What is Westbridge about?
It's not the newspaper.
I guess a bunch of old newspapers.
It's like, also, when we get to the final product of this float, we'll talk about the headlines on the newspaper itself, but, like, they're shit.
I mean, it's a school newspaper. They're not breaking any news here. Okay.
I'm pretty sure the Westbridge Lantern had the original publishing on the Monica Lewinsky scandal film.
Oh, I bet, yeah. Oh, yeah, the ones who broke the story.
Crack reporter Valerie found out.
Yeah, Valerie interviewed Linda Tripp.
That's right. Also, like, it's also going in a parade. Like, Libby's got the right idea.
I mean, I have to agree. Like, yes, you have to make it look presentable, not a bunch of old newspapers hung up to an old car.
People in a parade want cheerleaders. They want to see pomp and circumstance. They don't want to have to read something as it whizzes by.
As this was going on, there was a question in my head that I will pose to you later.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to pose to you now, but I think it's going to be a better question to ask at the end.
Bit of foreshadowing there.
Yes, a little bit of foreshadowing. But to go back, what did you think about Salem and Hilda at this point?
Honestly, like, this whole episode, one of the things I like the most, besides, like, the full A story, is just, like, the pairing of Hilda and Salem together. Like, I think Nick Bakay and Hilda are just both tremendously funny individuals. And, like, the two characters with their history work off each other so well that they could do pretty much anything. And, like, them sneaking around and trying to do something behind Zelda's back is just a lot of fun to watch at any time, including this.
I think that was probably one of the highlights of this episode, was that whole, like you said, the relationship between the two of them and them sneaking around Zelda's back to get this, to get it in the market, and then, you know, whatever happens later on. But yes, I think it was amazing.
It's terrific. And that whole scene when Zelda and Hilda are arguing about whether or not to use it for monetary gain, the formula, Salem is just wearing a pair of sunglasses. Like, the funny thing is that shows up later on when we get to the salesmanship element of this formula, but, like, right now, it's just like they clearly took the puppet and needed to reshoot this or whatever. And it's like, yeah, he's just wearing sunglasses for absolutely no reason. He looks cool as fuck, sure. But, like, explain that, please. And I also like the bit when Hilda says that cleaning toilet bowls is suffering. Salem, they cut back to Salem and he's just, like, casually nodding in agreement. It's like, how do you, when's the last time you cleaned a toilet bowl, you fucking cat?
Yes, I agree. Money. Yeah. What did you think about Hilda's outfit?
I think actually this is an outfit we've seen before. I don't remember when it was. I think it's like, if I was to describe it, it would sound worse than it actually looks. I don't think it looks all that bad on her.
I mean, I think for the time period, it's pretty spot on for that time period, but it looks hideous.
It is a lot. Like, the vest with, like, the flowery brown patterns, brown and gold, and, like, over the brown velvet, like, long sleeve blouse. I mean,
when her pants and her vest match, you know there's a problem.
That was the thing, though. Like, if you ever watched Frasier had a lot of matching pants and vests for a time period, and I did watch Frasier.
What did you think about Libby? Libby's remark to her about, you know, the you and we and I and we. I thought it was I thought for Libby it was pretty good, but Sabrina's rebuttal was pretty garbage.
The your butt and your head.
Your butt and your head. I'm like, Really? That's like something a 2-year-old would say.
I think like
no thought was put into it.
I think like as a whole, this episode is pretty well written. There's a lot of fun like exchanges and there's some really fun jokes later on. And I think like Libby does get a lot of that and Sabrina does have her moments in this also. It was a good line from Libby and I think she does get some like really like cripplingly cruel lines later on that actually I think further the character. I didn't mention it before, but I'll mention it now. This episode first aired January 23rd, 1998, written by Frank Conniff, who's written a lot of these and will go on to write more. January 23rd, 1998, Phil, it's important for several reasons, but one of them is that we've finally passed the period in time when Candle in the Wind 1997 was the number one song in America. There's a new number one song. Any idea which we were listening to in January of 98, Phil?
Oh, man, that's a good question. Well, considering I was alive then, I don't know. I have no idea how.
Number one song in America when Phil was alive, Truly, Madly, Deeply by Savage Garden.
Oh, what a great song. Al, you should play a part of it right here. I want to stand with you on a mountain. I want to bathe with you in the sea. I want to lay like this forever until the sky falls down over me.
An excellent song. And I'm sure it takes everyone back to their 1998 proms.
Oh yeah, I should sing a rendition of it right now.
I'm sure they were still playing that.
I want a day for you in the sea. I don't know the rest of it.
Such a good song, honestly. And Savage Garden, did they do anything else? I can't remember.
No, they had one album, and then they like cut it. It was like so good, that album too. God, my childhood.
A moment in time, indeed.
Like a candle in the wind.
True. The one last thing I wanted to add here, Phil, before we move on. So they are decorating this float, Libby and Sabrina are. Oddly, though, they're decorating it in the school gym.
Oh, Al, you took away my glory.
I mean, look.
So this is... Okay, so let's talk about it since you already brought it up.
Yes.
How are they going to get it out of the gym?
I assume the gym has some giant bay door that no one ever uses aside from
what?
Now.
What gym? Okay, you went to school. You went to a gym, you know.
I sure
what
did.
Gym had a humongous bay that would open out the side so you could roll out this thing?
No one. No school.
Exactly. This is poorly thought out.
Also, how did they even get it in there?
That's what I'm saying. There's no way of getting in or out of this thing. Like, you just can't, like, take the side of the building out so you can roll out this thing.
I mean, I get that, like, designing, like, a parking lot set would probably be more a pain in the ass than just using the set you already have, but, like...
I mean, Al, they had the set. They've had the set where they had...
the garage?
With him and his buddies. Yeah, the garage. Yep. That's all they had to do. It would easily been explained.
That's true.
But they literally did it in the lunchroom, gymnasium / main room. Gosh. And you're like... I literally sat there. I'm like, at the end, I'm like, how are they going to get this thing out of there? How did this get to the parade today?
We're changing parades now. It'll be you walk around the floats.
Walking around the float.
It's like a museum, just a tour, and then you leave.
Yes, as we all saw the float. Okay, now we can take it apart.
Oh man, like when you finally do realize that, like this whole episode falls apart. It's like,
I mean, what are I literally doing? Watched this whole thing. I watched it twice, Al, and you know, because I usually watch it once and then I write my show notes on the second time.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like halfway through the second time, and I was like, wait a second, how are they gonna get this thing out of there? Like. Yep. It's like nobody thought about how
this is exactly what happens when you model your leadership structure after the House of Congress.
There you go. Nice job.
They don't think things through.
Looks like government built that float.
Oh, man. Talk about a float by committee. Oh, great. It'll look fantastic, and we'll build it inside to avoid rain. One problem, guys.
That float also costs $38 billion to build.
The army paid for this float, and the hammer alone cost $9,000.
Yeah, Harvey literally billed us $36 million for his time.
That's right. This vote has to be built well to defend America's oil interests abroad.
As we find out later, he likes to sleep under there for some reason.
That is true. Back at the house, Hilda and Salem find Zelda's formula just as she enters, and Hilda covers up with a lie about finding her wallet, which Salem totally backs up. She then says that her and Salem will get back to what they were doing and clean up, leading to cash register sounds and dollar bill signs in Hilda's eyes. But when Salem gives her a bit of a cough, she gets rid of it to the sounds of change hitting the ground. Wonderful little joke there. Very cartoonish. We then go back to the weird-ass float, where Libby fucks with Sabrina some more, and Sabrina is just sick of it at this point, so she uses a spell which keeps Libby at least 5 paces away from her at all times. This causes Jenny Green to quickly turn around whenever she approaches Sabrina, eventually falling to the floor and destroying a girl's cheerful yellow decorations to cover for her slip and fall.
I said cheerful and you picked yellow?
Me and my finger. Now that's teamwork.
Later on in the bathroom, the Quizmaster creepily appears in the mirror of a girl's bathroom to give Sabrina a bit of a criticism, as the spell that she just incanted is illegal. He goes on to explain that you can't magically keep your problems away from you, so he tickets her. Oh, by the way, he's dressed up as basically one of the guys from Chips. With a citation which reverses her spell, meaning that now, instead of staying at least 5 paces away from Sabrina, Sabrina has to stay within 5 paces of Libby. And if she doesn't, Quizmaster tells her that something terrible will happen.
And if you do happen to move more than 5 paces away, something terrible will happen. Something that will scare you to the depths of your soul. Say hi to Libby for me.
We then soon see her rush through... We then soon see her in the halls near Libby, who is, oddly enough, flirting with a guy who is at best like a 6, maybe a 6.5.
She's getting a little desperate.
Honestly, at one point she tells him that he is so great, and it's like, no, Libby, he's not that great. Trust me. He looks like a lazy lay, if you know what I mean, Libby. And if you don't know what I mean, why not? I'm being pretty damn clear. Libby repeatedly comments on how weird Sabrina is being, and at one point, the guy just walks away from an infuriated Libby. Sabrina then keeps close to Libby, who walks to her locker, and is creeped out by Sabrina, thinking that Sabrina's trying to look in her locker, but Sabrina explains that her new locker is just the one right next to hers. And when she magically zaps it open, she inadvertently pulls out a hilarious pair of men's jocks. Sabrina then asks where Libby is going, and she explains that she's going to cheer practice with an insulting cheer, although a very well-done cheer by Jenny Green. And in order to keep close to Libby, Sabrina decides that she'll write an article about a day in the life of a cheerleader for the paper, but she does promise that it will not be a puff piece. We then head back to the house, where Hilda and Salem are watching the TV because their new infomercial for Zelda's formula, which they've terribly dubbed Scientist in a Drum, is on.
This dungeon stone is white, but what would you call this one?
Right.
Exactly. And that's why for the next 20 minutes, we'll be telling you how you can get your house this clean with new Scientist in a Drum.
And now here's Bruce Jenner to tell you more.
I don't believe it. You marketed my formula. And with a poorly produced infomercial.
Zelda then comes home in the middle of this and is horrified as they not only stole her formula, but more egregiously, they produced a shittily made infomercial to sell it. Just then the toaster goes off, and the family soon finds that there are dozens of orders for the formula. Zelda wants it to be used for good, but eventually gets convinced to sell it. And while she does rationalize it being for the greater good, we soon find out that she's got money signs in her eyes, too. All right, Phil. Let's go back and talk about... We can bounce around here, but let's start with the Hilda and Salem duo here. I thought even before when they're looking for the formula and they finally find it. I think the way in which Salem covers for Hilda is fucking great. Like, Hilda's like, oh yeah, I was just looking for my wallet. And he's just like, she means it, I swear. I was like, aw, you guys are just a great little team.
In the other realm's name is going on here.
Lost my wallet?
She's telling the truth, I swear.
And now that I found it, Salem and I will just get back to work and clean up.
Are we ever gonna clean up?
I mean, it's like, you know, they're gonna be they're ride or die for each other. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And then, my God, this infomercial might be one of my favorite things in this episode. Maybe my favorite, just because like it is shittily produced. It is as shittily produced as Zeldin makes it sound. Like, Hilda is just wearing a doctor's coat over the outfit she was wearing like 5 seconds ago and might still be wearing now. There's just like a weird piece of fabric hanging on the wall behind them, and they're just like in front of a white wall with a table. Like, this could have been like something we did as kids once we got a video camera.
We probably did.
We did sell infomercials for, we did produce infomercials for Scientist in a Drum. Also, the name Scientist in a Drum is, like, beautifully shit, also. Like, it takes a very special kind of bad writer to make that.
I mean, they literally probably just had Sabrina do it. It sounds like, you know, the way with her, with her good old quips to get back at people.
That's right. That but, and her ideas for things, like, yeah, we could,
Butthead.
Maybe you put newspaper clippings behind you guys. She just really wants to get her headlines across.
Maybe they can put the newspaper clippings in the back of the infomercial.
A fun little thing also, Phil, when the orders start coming in through the toaster, which I think is also like a fun little effect, I did pause it, and you can tell that for each order of Scientist in a Drum, they are charging $20.
Oh, 20 even. $19.99.
$20 even. I do think, like, this actually... There are some people that might go, well, why would anyone in the other realm pay for this when they're all witches? Now, this, I think, gets covered pretty well because they are witches, but it's the formula that you need. So it's akin That's to true. Having a proprietary spell. Like, sure, you could do the research yourself and figure it out, or you could just pay $20 and get it. Beautifully taken care of there.
What'd you think about the Quizmaster Eric Estrada?
Yeah, like, again, talking about things that are beautifully shittily done, like, just out of nowhere, he's just dressed as Eric Estrada from Chips. Like, the funny thing is, this is one of the better outfits he's ever worn because it's a uniform instead of just, like, a bunch of eccentrically colored pieces of clothing. But it's so poorly done, or it's so like lazily done, that his sleeve, there's a badge there that just says like State Patrol instead of actually like saying Other Realm or anything. It says State Police. It's just like, cover that, put a sticker there, put Other Realm or something there. Come on, guys.
That's the State Patrol.
Yeah, you know, the Other Realm State Highway, the one.
Yeah, State Highway 1, the patrolman.
I do think, however, though, that he, this is one of the better episodes, maybe the best one so far for the Quizmaster character. Like, I think his pairing with Sabrina works here as, like, he kind of takes on the role of her sidekick later on in the episode. And, like, even the lesson that he's teaching her, I think, is one of the better lessons of season two so far. And I think they do get about actually hammering it home. Sabrina later says maybe a little too strongly, but I think better too strong a lesson than like no lesson at all and just a menagerie of scenes thrown together. That being said, maybe don't just appear in the mirror of a girl's high school bathroom, Quizmaster. A bit creepy, maybe.
Don't forget, he is invisible, that we find out later on.
Yeah, but he's still got eyes.
It's all good. Only Sabrina knows that he could be seen.
Just because they can't see him doesn't mean he can't see them, and I think that's the bigger problem.
Exactly, creepo.
It'll take your badge away real quick. Christ.
It's 1998. It's all good.
No, it's not. Phil doesn't mean it, folks.
I'm not. I don't mean it. It's a bad joke.
Also, I mean, the magical repercussions here of Sabrina having to be like next to Libby this whole time. I think both ends of it, both the Sabrina keeping Libby away from her five paces and then having to be close to her, I think those are two really fun uses of magic. And I think the reversal is also really fun. Like, it's a clever idea that, you know, magically keep someone away from you. That's a cool concept. And then the repercussion of having to be like tied to them magically, I think, is also kind of fun, both to watch and just as like a cool use of magic as an idea.
Who do you think acted it better? Do you think Gina Lee Green acted it better than Melissa Joan Hart?
I mean, Melissa Joan Hart does try out, does give it a fair go, but like, Gina Lee Green does end up falling on her ass at one point, so like, she is going for a home run here.
Yeah, I think I had to agree with you. I think she was much more committed to it than Melissa Joan Hart.
Mm. And of course, I think we all wanted to hear what Bruce Jenner had to say about this formula.
Yeah, why did he cut it out? I know, come on.
I mean, look, it was 98. You probably could have gotten Bruce Jenner. He wasn't doing anything.
I mean, come on. Probably getting a Kardashian pregnant somewhere.
They might have. Maybe actually just that about then. Yeah, probably.
Just right about then.
He took
It's all Sabrina's fault.
He had just enough money to have Kendall Jenner. Thanks a lot.
Ugh.
Phil.
Yes.
We then go to cheer practice where Libby basically tells Sabrina that if she insists on staying, she has to at least stop asking for the sweet release of death so loudly. They then go on to cheer, which obviously Sabrina does not too well, but she's soon interrupted by Harvey, who comes in and asks what she's doing. She explains that she lost a bet and that she has to now stay irrationally close to Libby. Libby then calls for a break, and when Sabrina keeps staying close to her, she just throws a lot of really like well-written shade and cut-down lines at Sabrina, who eventually gets sick of this and like busts through the invisible chains holding her to Libby. I think this is like the best of Melissa Joan Hart's pantomime here. And upon doing this, we get like a big, almost like Broadway puff of smoke. And we see that Libby has been replaced by a box, which Sabrina soon finds out is a puzzle for ages 3 and up. When we then return, we just see Sabrina running home with the box, as we then see Salem and Hilda in the kitchen reveling in the sales of Scientists in a Drum. And while Zelda comes in thirsty, Hilda just tries to get her to go back to work as quickly as possible to make more formula, leading to an argument between the two, which Salem breaks up by saying at least they're going to be rich and he didn't have to marry Martha Ray. This gets interrupted by Sabrina's arrival, and the aunties soon see that she blew up a mortal.
What's the matter?
Look!
Uh-oh.
A Libby puzzle.
Sabrina, did you blow up a mortal?
She started it.
The quizmaster then pops in and gives her a lesson about distancing herself from her issues. He explains that if they reassemble Libby correctly, she will be brought back. We then get a montage of the four of them assembling the Libby puzzle. This includes Zelda and Quizmaster high-fiving with the arms of Puzzle Libby, which is a clear homage to Dream Date. Sabrina stealing Libby's mouth and then having to put it back, and Hilda breaking out a blowtorch to cut one of the pieces to make it fit. When they're done assembling the puzzle, Sabrina notes that they're still missing some of the pieces, and upon reading the fine print on the box, discovers that not all the pieces are included in the box, which Quizmaster then reveals another bit of a hang-up, that being that there's an hourglass which is ticking by, and that if she doesn't find the other pieces, by the time the hourglass runs out, Libby will be a puzzle forever.
Boy, in the final analysis, the Libby puzzle isn't much fun.
He says that in order to find the pieces, Sabrina has to explore Libby's life, and they head out to do so, as Hilda and Zelda try to make amends about their fighting over the formula and the running of the business. But of course they continue to bicker about who's in charge, and Salem just asks for whoever's in charge to bring over a fire extinguisher, as during the whole montage he's been toiling in the lab making more formula. Phil.
Yes, sir.
My first note here is one of the lines that Libby says, which is, "Any ground I found with you would indeed be common." Got her. Do you know who Martha Ray is, Phil?
I have no idea. I'm not that old.
I'm glad, because it took a lot, not a lot, but it took some research to figure out. And this was a reference that I guess would not be totally off 1998, but like the person, Martha Ray, is very old and dead by this point. Martha Ray was an actress in the 30s, 40s, and 50s who starred in a lot of movies designed for like the troops, like entertaining the troops. She also did a lot of like USO shows and such. And this whole like Marry Martha Ray thing is in reference to Mark Harris, which was Martha Ray's 7th husband and 8th marriage. She married him 3 years before she died in 1991. So she would have been in her 70s or 80s. He was 46. He was openly bisexual. And from the couple of interviews I heard of his on Howard Stern today in doing research for this, was a pretty clear money-grubbing kind of guy. Yeah, go watch some of his interviews, because like it's pretty obvious that he's one of those people who like one of those cliches of someone who marries like an old Hollywood actor or actress just to clean up after they die.
Well, there it is. What a life, huh? A guy married to a 75-year-old woman hanging around at a party with a lot of her old friends.
Yeah, and you enjoy that.
I have a wonderful time. I really do.
You could see where people might get suspicious and think you're in it for the money. You understand that, Mark?
Before they knew me, maybe.
Yes, but, I understand.
Yeah, but not now.
All right.
Pretty gross. But, again, Salem, this isn't the Gilmore Girls. Maybe make a more topical reference.
Yeah.
Christ. Phil, let's go to the whole montage of assembling the Libby puzzle. What did you think of this?
It was funny because we were talking about it before.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like, as you're watching it, I like to watch it in closed captioning so I can kind of get some of the words that they say under their breath, or, you know, if they say something and I just don't catch it, I could read it in closed captioning.
Mm-hmm.
But in this point where the music's playing, there's just like this generic, like hardcore, like metal playing. And the caption says tub thumping by Chumbawamba playing. And it was not tub thumping by Chumbawamba playing.
See, I didn't realize that they hadn't changed the closed captioning, because originally when this aired, they of course did use tub thumping by Chumbawamba, a much better song with this generic rock, like, filler music that they used here.
Oh, it's terrible.
And I mean, the fact that they didn't bother to change that is pretty hilarious. I actually went back and rewatched the scene, and I lowered the volume all the way, and I went to Spotify and I played Tub Thumping by Chumbawamba.
Yeah.
It makes this so much better. Like
pissing the night away
500 times. Like when Salem should take a whiskey drink and then a vodka drink and then a lager drink.
And then it's probably what he was doing in the lab over there.
That's right.
I did find it hilarious that it was like, again, I do watch it with closed captioning.
Mm-hmm.
So like as he's like mixing the stuff, he literally says, "Come to Papa."
Does he?
Yes.
That's great.
But like you don't catch it because like this hardcore metal is going on. Like you're about to like, you're doing like these head bashing like metal. I'm like, this has like nowhere to like. It has no reason to be here.
But that said, I think like the stuff that the actors do in the montage is kind of fun. Like the high fiving is kind of fun. All the Hilda
that
stuff.
That was cute.
Taking the mouth.
Taking the mouth. Hilda initially she's starting to cut, and like Sabrina stops her, and then she's there with a blowtorch later on.
The best part
is welder's mask.
When Sabrina like turns off the blowtorch, Hilda takes off the welder's mask or like lifts it up, and she makes like the angriest face at Sabrina. She's like, "You fucking asshole, you turned off my blowtorch. You don't do that to someone." I love it. Also, I think like me being a big fan of physical props and like physical effects and such, I absolutely adore this Libby puzzle. Like, I really hope Jenna Lee Green like got to keep it. Because like I would fucking love to have an owl puzzle, and I think all the listeners would also, obviously. But like, it's just like it's such a cool thing, but it's just like the fact that somebody had to make this for this episode is so much fun to me. I don't know why.
You know what, Al? For your birthday, I'm going to get you an owl puzzle.
Nice. Al, I need you to just lie down and take a photo of your full body.
I mean, yes, we'll take a full body picture of you and we'll just have it turned into a puzzle.
As if we don't have enough full body photos of Al. Come on.
Rawr.
That's how I support myself, folks. I do really also like the setup for the episode where, like, in order to bring Libby back, Sabrina has to go through elements of her life and, like, connect with who she is and, I mean, find a deeper understanding of Libby. I think that's a good lesson to, like, get across and also a good way to progress the story and, like, it's a smart storytelling mechanism in a lot of factors. I think I like it a lot. At school, Sabrina digs through the garbage, but finds no puzzle piece in Libby's old lunch. And Quizmaster just irritates her by constantly bringing up how much time is left in the hourglass. She checks around the float, but only discovers Harvey, who's still underneath the float, probably trying to figure out how the fuck to get it out of there, noting that he loves it down there as it's so peaceful. And when he wonders why, an invisible Quizmaster just suggests that maybe it's the fumes.
There's something really soothing about being under an engine. But I don't know what it is.
The fumes?
They then run out of the float hall gym, basically, and decide to check Libby's locker, but are first accosted by two cheerleaders wondering where Libby is. Sabrina just tells them that she's sure Libby will pull herself together soon. That's a joke that only makes sense if you know she's a puzzle, so they must have thought she was confusing as fuck. Inside Libby's locker, Sabrina discovers an algebra book, in turn figuring out that Libby is apparently not only bad in math, but actually has a math tutor, which impresses her as she didn't think that Libby would care enough to try and get better.
Why are you so surprised? Didn't you know she was bad at math?
Yeah, but what's surprising is that she cares that she's bad at math.
Sounds like you learned a little something about Libby.
And here's a piece of the puzzle.
This new piece of knowledge about Libby comes with a puzzle piece, and the back of the piece has Libby's address, so that's where the duo head to look for more pieces. In Libby's house, we then see her mother on the phone, badmouthing one of her bridge friends to another one of her bridge friends in a very Libby-like fashion. This includes her using the word, ew.
I don't care. I don't want Marge in my bridge club. She's a kook. Have you seen what she calls furniture? Ew.
Sabrina arrives at the door, explaining that she's one of Libby's friends who came over to pick up a book that she left here when she was there and her mom wasn't home. You know, that's a very specific time. And her mom just waves Sabrina in while continuing her conversation on the phone. Sabrina then comments to the invisible quizmaster that she sees where Libby gets her shitty personality and her meanness. And this, in turn, of course, comes with a new puzzle piece for Puzzle Libby, which happens to be attached to the back of Mrs. Chesler. Sabrina grabs it, startling the rich old lady, but she just plays it off as reminding the old dowager. I'm going to call her a dowager because it's a fun word. She's not full dowager, but she's like semi-dowager. She's like halfway, she's like three-quarters of the way to Kitty from Dharma and Greg.
Yeah, she was kind of waspy.
Sabrina just plays off like the tap on the back as a reminder that she's still there and heads off to Libby's room to recover the book. Eventually finding Libby's room, Sabrina and the Quizmaster enter and realize that the back of the last puzzle piece says one of these things is not like the other, leading Quizmaster to recite the song terribly. He clearly has never actually heard the song One of These Things Is Not Like the Other.
One of these things is not like the other.
One of these things just doesn't belong. Can you guess?
Well, at least I'm not holding up the hourglass.
They begin trying to spot what's different in the room, and seeing all the gold frames of photos of Libby that she has, Sabrina picks out the one purple frame and figures that that must be the different thing, and finds some writing on the back.
Look! This frame is purple, all the others are gold. And there's something on the back. Buy 20 gold frames, get one purple frame free.
That's maybe my favorite joke this entire episode. It's delivered perfectly, it's fucking hilarious, and I love it. Sabrina decides that they have to be methodical, only for a smash cut to reveal that they basically just tore Libby's room apart. Sabrina eventually notices a gold frame with a photo of Libby's grandma instead of a photo of herself. And attached to it is a note that reads how Libby brought her grandma to the ballet for her birthday and how grandma will return the favor on a roller coaster of Libby's choice. And discovering this love for her granny helps Sabrina discover a new puzzle piece on the back of the frame, which they figure must be the last one as there's nothing written on the back. They go to head out, but are accosted by Mrs. Chesler, who offers to let them wait, or let Sabrina wait, in the garage for Libby, because Sabrina's gross. Sabrina decides she'll just head home instead, and as they leave, an invisible quizmaster just taps the old lady on the back, scaring her, probably because she felt a black man's hand on her shoulder. Phil.
Yes, sir.
As I said before, this is by far the best use of Alamy Ballard as the quizmaster. He's actually teaching Sabrina something here. Like, maybe not in terms of, well, I guess he does get the spell, the illegal spell across, but like, he's actually giving her a lesson that betters her, which rarely the quizmaster actually does. Usually he just pops in for Halloween candy or whatever.
Yeah.
I also do like the sidekick role that he has with her here, where like they're bouncing jokes off of each other about what's going on. I think it works really well.
Do you want to stay and see Libby? You can wait in the garage.
Don't do it. She'll turn on the car.
I tend to agree with you. You see more of a buddy, you know, a buddy
cop
relationship building between both of them.
Mm-hmm. And I do think that the purple outfit he's wearing with like the purple silk shirt and pants is probably one of the less hideous outfits he's ever worn.
I actually wrote here, he looks like a pimp.
Kind
P-I-M-P.
Of. In the positive way or like a literal pimp?
Maybe a little of both.
Little from column A?
Not one from column A and a little from column B. But no, he doesn't look like the stereotypical pimp, you know, like Snoop Dogg kind of pimp with a big cane. And,
right.
You know, he does look, you know, he looks very fly for his time, to use a word of the time.
Very good, Phil. You're a regular Mark McGrath.
Too fly for a white guy.
I wrote that he also kind of looks like what I would imagine Will Smith will look like as the genie in Aladdin.
You mean hideous?
No. Well, actually, to be fair, what we've seen from that Aladdin movie, Will Smith looks way more ridiculous than Alamy Ballard.
I don't know. From what I hear, that movie's going to basically be like the worst thing ever.
Look, I think Will Smith is charming enough where he can make anything work, but like, just the look he has is not the best.
He's got some big shoes to fill.
That's true. Christine Rose here, Phil, is playing Mrs. Chesler, and I actually think she does a really good job. Like, it's sort of one note. I think that's more down to just like the characterization, but her performance is really entertaining, and she is going for it. Like, she obviously has to be the basic Libby character in like all in one scene. I think it kind of works.
I mean, I think you're like you said, she's very one note, but I think she's supposed to be one note.
Mm-hmm.
That type of person is very one note.
The one thing I will say about her, though, is she does not know how to decorate a room. She has so many bronze horse statues in her house. She has like two tables full of bronze horse statues.
And she does not like Marge in her bridge club because she's a kook.
You're not exactly on my A-list either, kook.
I mean, who fucking does like Marge? That bitch.
That Marge. Ugh.
Get it together, Marge.
Jeez, Marge. You're such a kook. What did you think about Harvey popping up?
I think it's kind of sad that like this is all they have for Nate Richard this episode.
I mean, I think it was like the saddest thing ever. Like, there's nobody in school right now except for Harvey, who's literally just hanging out underneath underneath the float. Just hanging out there.
That was the weird thing. It's like, why are you, like, first with Harvey, but then, like, also Sabrina was able to get into the school, and, like, those two cheerleaders are also walking through the halls. It's like, don't you people have homes? Go home.
I do like the first thing that she thinks about, like, for Libby, like, how am I going to find clue? is rummaging through the trash. Like, really? Like, why would you do that? Wouldn't you, like, be the first thing you'd go to is her locker?
Her
locker. No, I'm gonna rummage through this garbage here and then pull out this banana peel. And then I'll go to her locker.
Her lunch meant an awful lot to her, Phil.
I guess so. I could tell a lot by her lunch.
One fun side note, according to IMDb, which is always right and always great to look at for these episodes, the African-American cheerleader who accosts Sabrina, her name, she's credited as just cheerleader, but the actress's name is Venus DeMilo Thomas.
Mm.
That is an excellent name, and I am glad her parents named her that.
What else did she do? Did she do anything else?
She was, like, on certain episodes of, like, a lot of 90s kid shows, like Sister Sister and Family Matters. I think she might be Canadian, because I think one of her earliest credits...
I was just going to say, what Hallmark movie is she in?
She was in the Veronica Mars miniseries most recently, which will be out in 2019. That's in pre-production now. She was on The Bold and the Beautiful for 2 years.
Well, good job, Venus de Milo.
Let's see. Anything good here? Nah. Oh, she was on Smart Guy, the TV series, as Renita.
Because he's a smart boy. That was a great show, too.
That was a great show. She was on an episode of Party of Five, so I like her already.
Everybody wants to.
Phil's just going to sing all the theme songs to the show.
It's a very musical Phil today.
Phil, she was on an episode of Hanging with Mr. Cooper.
Oh, yeah.
Cooper.
You know what? I don't remember that theme song, so I was just going to let you take it away.
I was going to say, I could tell the pause there. Oh, yeah? That's great. Anything else? Oh,
that's great. No, I have nothing else to say.
Most importantly here, at the very end of this scene when Mrs. Tressler comes into the room, or right before, in fact, Sabrina freaks out that the room is a mess, and Quizmaster just immediately uses his magic to clean up the whole room. He's the only one who knows how magic works.
I mean, what is wrong with these people?
Like,
what are we going to do when we get caught? Like, why wouldn't you just be like, okay, lock the door, clean the room.
Lock the door, freeze time, you know, any one of these things.
Leave.
Just disappear.
Just disappear. You know, clean the room, disappear. Hey.
Both good options. Man.
I mean, come on.
Back at the Spellman house, Phil, Sabrina and the family put the final pieces back into Libby, the Achilles heel that came from her math book, her lack of math skills, the cold shoulder they got from her mother, and the piece that they got from her grandmother's photo, her heart. As the hourglass expires, Sabrina realizes that there's still a piece missing, and the Quizmaster explains that this piece doesn't yet exist, that it's the piece that symbolizes compassion for others, which Sabrina has to create in Libby through showing compassion for Libby even when it's hard.
I get it. Mm-hmm. And by the way, could this lesson be any more heavy-handed?
I could have been behind a pulpit.
We then get a bit of fun magic as cardboard Libby pops up and returns into human form, and she's no fool. She immediately wonders why the fuck she's there. Sabrina tries to cover with a story about her coming over to see if she needed a ride, but Libby just straight out goes, I would not do that. I'm getting the fuck out of here. And quickly leaves she throws a bit more shade at Sabrina, but this time does it with a terrible insult name. She calls her Safrikna.
Once again, weirdness reigns whenever Safrikna's around.
It was so awesome.
That doesn't work, Libby.
I think it was pretty good, actually.
I would like to see, like, another part of Libby's room, like the wall we didn't see, where it's just like Sabrina's name and like her breaking it up into possible insults on a whiteboard. Yeah, Safrikna will work.
Like a vision board of how am I gonna make fun of her today?
It's like one of those boards where someone's trying to solve a crime with all the red pieces of string, and it's like, all right, freak Sabrina. E is here and here.
Safrikna.
God.
Just like the little yarns going left and right. Like, oh, what am I gonna do?
Just like, oh man. This is how Libby spends her time. Sabrina just comments that showing compassion for Libby is going to be real easy. At school the next day, Sabrina compliments Libby's side of the float, getting the cold shoulder from Libby, who throws an insulting comment about Sabrina needing a dictionary if she thinks that her insult was a compliment. Sabrina then tries another angle, asking for help with her crepe paper, and while Libby initially turns her down, upon hearing that Sabrina wants to finish early so she can go see her Nana, Libby pitches in. Back at the house, Hilda walks in with some bad news for Zelda, that being that their formula not only cleans, but basically also causes gangrene, which Zelda soon confirms by looking at her own arm. They then run into the kitchen where a gangrene-covered Salem is watching the toaster overflow with return orders, and while the aunties start bickering, this bickering includes the comment about supply-side economics.
I cannot be held responsible
for the mismanagement
of this company.
You corrupted me with your supply-side economics.
Sabrina returns and reminds the aunties about how well her and Libby work together, and this stops the bickering, and they go to hug Sabrina, which she quickly shuts down. At school the next day, Mrs. Quick compliments the girls on their melding of their ideas, which Libby takes total credit for. Sabrina just lets it go, explaining to Mrs. Quick that it's okay as she's met her mom and she understands. Quizmaster then appears in the oddly placed computer on the float that Sabrina is using and asks how she's handling Libby, before asking if he can stick around as he's never been on a float before. Well, I mean, this is the closest you're going to get to a parade because that float's not going anywhere, Mr. Ballard. She says that it's fine if he wants to stick around as he's right in the middle of her Agents of Destruction video game, which she's playing with a joystick, and she sends fireballs flying at the Quizmaster, who really sells them quite shittily, almost as badly as that infomercial was selling Scientist in a Drum.
Say, do you mind if I hang around for a bit?
Never been on a float before.
Oh, that's sweet. And you just happen to be in the middle of my Agents of Destruction video game.
Fire in the hole!
Phil.
Yes, sir.
Like I said, I do like the concept of the puzzle metaphor in that it not only, sets up that Sabrina has to discover pieces of Libby's personality. I do like the fact that they also, connect perfectly to how they exist in Libby, like the math problem being her Achilles heel and the meanness of her mother being her cold shoulder. I think, these are nice little metaphors. I appreciate the writing that was put into this.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I think that they did, there was a lot of good writing, at least in this aspect, like you said, with the different things, the cold shoulder, the Achilles heel, it makes sense. I think it might be a little bit above a 15-year-old's comprehension,
mm-hmm.
But it makes sense.
Not above a 15-year-old's comprehension, though, is the phrase Safrikna.
Safrikna.
Try harder, Libby, please. Also, I did think that the gangrene makeup on Zelda and Hilda's arm did look pretty good. Convincing.
Mm-hmm.
What did you have here, Phil?
I had, why were all the return orders in red?
I guess just to differentiate them from,
the buys. Yeah. The green buys. I'm good with green.
You know, Phil, you often have to handle complaints and at work, and you know how when you get an email, it's all red when it's a complaint email?
Always. Always in red.
Just makes it easier to, delete them.
It's never in red. Never. But, yes, I did like that they were in red and all the refunds came through.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Quip, congratulating both of them, but Libby being Libby, took all the praise.
Yes. Let's go to the float though, Phil, because there's a couple of weird things I want to point out to you.
I still don't see how it's going to get out of there, but go ahead.
That's one of them, but yes. The other being, why is there a computer on there? Like,
I have no idea. And like, why is there an office chair and her just sitting there? Everybody else was working and she's just sitting there playing video games on it.
Like, even if you're going to explain it as like, oh yeah, I guess the journalism gets done on a computer, so you want to show someone at work journalisming, that's a word now, on the float. But like, then why in God's name does she have a video game there? She has this giant joystick, which I definitely remember because Phil used to have a bunch of those.
Yeah, but those were for flying games, Al. You need a joystick for a flying game.
Well, sure. But it's like, why does she have one of these things at all? Why is she playing a game at all?
That makes no sense to me.
The other thing is, as I mentioned before, the headlines on the giant like newspaper that's set behind her. This is what she wanted to display, okay? So the main headline is truce declared between cheerleaders and journalists. What? Where was this war between cheerleaders and journalists?
Oh man. It's breaking news.
Also, apparently, according to some of the other headlines in this newspaper, test scores went up 5%. Breaking news. The debate team also won second place. And most impressively, there's a Ask Libby section of this newspaper. Like, what the fuck, Sabrina? You should just let her go with the cheerleaders.
Ask Libby. That would have been great. I'd love to see some Ask Libby.
I mean, it was the one thing I loved about that one episode where Sabrina changes the layout of the paper behind Libby's back is like, I got to read that fake article that Libby had written about like fashion. It's amazing. Go back and listen to that episode if for nothing else than that incredible bit of writing that I assume they thought no one would ever see, but I called them out on it. God, this float, like, it looks like a fucking mess. Like, the front half is red, white, and blue, and then the back half is green and white for Westbridge colors. It just looks insane.
It's democracy days, Al.
This is what happens when you let committees design things.
Dun, da, 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 da.
Phil, did you have anything else here?
Nope. Just want to say one more Safrikna.
Oh, perfect. As the credits roll, the aunties and Sabrina assemble a puzzle in the kitchen while discussing the Democracy Days parade, with Zelda adding that Sabrina's was the best float, and it will stand as a monument to the democratic spirit. Though Sabrina notes that it totally exploded thanks to Harvey's shitty mechanic work once it got back to the school. How did it get out? The school burnt down.
It burnt down because they turned it on. The whole school burnt down.
Maybe that's how they got it out. Like, they burnt down a wall.
Oh, yeah. Just take out a whole wall.
That was the plan to begin with. Hilda just notes that this explosion just serves as a reminder about the delicacy of democracy. Sabrina then goes on to say that the puzzle is actually pretty easy considering how hard it is to live with. And we soon discover that it's a Salem puzzle. And he asks her to finish his nose so that he can sneeze. She does, and he immediately sneezes in her face as the episode closes.
Hurry up and finish my nose. I need to sneeze.
Phil.
Yes, sir?
I thought this bit about democracy was oddly poignant. I thought it was beautiful and could be used to encourage people to vote.
Well, there you go. It was, 1998.
Yep.
No, we still had some time to vote.
It was a midterm election that year. This is January.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so rock the vote, right, Phil.
Yeah, you go. Well, yes, Sabrina will get all the young people who can't vote yet to go out and vote.
Absolutely. Unlike the Libby puzzle, Phil, obviously had to be custom made for this episode. I feel like as far as the Salem one goes, they probably just like found an old like black cat puzzle and were like, that's good enough.
A generic black cat puzzle.
Yeah, because it's like it's set on this yellow background that just makes it look like a puzzle from like 1978. what'd you have here at the end?
I didn't have much of anything. There was really nothing that really caught my eye. But like I said, I was just left pondering how they got this thing out of there. That was it. That's a really, really got to me.
Like, the thing has to be like 13 feet tall.
Yeah. I mean, you saw how it finished at the end. Like, there was, I mean, there was this, it looked like a, you know, Tournament of Roses parade float. Like, it looked like a big float.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like,
oh. Like, it is an impressive set piece, but it's just like, how are you going to get this fucking thing out? I can see the wall. I can see the door behind it. And it's like, those are double doors, but that thing is not getting out and then getting through the halls.
It was nice to finally see, you know, Sabrina realize that Libby may not be as terrible as she thinks, especially with, you know, her thoughts on her grandma, you know, her grandmother's her heart.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it was nice to see that.
With that, Phil, I think it's time that we go to the ending ceremonies here on the Witch Trials.
Da, 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 da.
Of course, we start off with the TGIF scale, the This Good I Feel scale, the scale by which we rate all episodes of Sabrina Teenage Witch. Phil, where does this fall for you on that 1 to 5 scale, each one corresponding to a TGIF show?
I would probably say this is like a Hanging with Mr. Cooper, Al.
So a solid 3 out of 5.
Yeah. I would say it's not average. It's just a bit above average.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we finally get to see a little bit of Libby's life and what, you know, the things that she had to deal with in her life and how she became who she is.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it was good because you kind of learned a little bit more about the character
right.
of Libby. Got a little bit more information about it. And I think that helps in the longevity of the story mm-hmm. as a whole. So I would give it a 3 out of 5, Al.
Right. Fair enough. I actually had it a low Boy Meets World. I really love this episode. I like.
Wow.
I thought when I first watched it that it was, you know, a good, average good episode. But then, like, upon rewatching it to get ready for this episode, it was like, there's so much that I like about it. I love the Libby story. Everything you said is absolutely true. It gives you a greater understanding of the Libby character, which does benefit you in the long run. I think it's nice, all the background stuff they did. I think there's so much fun stuff in this. Like, all the Hilda and Salem stuff is great. There's some really funny jokes in it. I think, like I said, as funny as that infomercial was, and it is fucking hilarious, that one delivery of Melissa Joan Hart's, that Melissa Joan Hart delivery of that line about the purple frame, I think is just so perfectly done and such a funny joke. Like, I literally rewound it like 3 times to listen to it because I thought it was that funny. This is a great episode. I think the Quizmaster is used to his fullest here. The moral is a solid one that actually gets hammered home and like gets carried out throughout the episode. It's not just rushed at the end. I think this is a very well written episode. It's not perfect, so it is like on the lower end of a Boy Meets World for me, but this is one of the best episodes I've seen in a long time, especially in season 2 of Sabrina Teenage Witch. That said, Phil, of course, the main event here on the Witch Trials, the Back of the Linen Closet, our episodic award for each installment's biggest fashion flop. Phil, what gets it for you? I don't know if there's so much to choose from this episode, honestly. Like,
there's a couple of things to choose from. I think I'm probably going to have to go with Libby's outfit. The brown, like, corduroy-looking,
yes.
like, pants and jacket with the blue
turtleneck. Yeah.
I mean, the color combination is terrible. It makes her look boxy. It actually makes her look probably, like, heavier than she actually is.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably say that's probably going to be my go-to.
I totally agree with you on this because, while I didn't think the colors were such a big deal, cause like brown is a very big thing in 98 and like maybe the blue doesn't go with it perfectly, but just like the cut of it does make her look really bad. It's like too big for her also, which doesn't help.
It doesn't flatter her shape at all.
When she was walking through the halls, I actually like, it struck me how much Jenny Green here looks like, Neve Campbell. And I think Neve Campbell was gorgeous, but like Jenny Green, very, very pretty girl here at the time, but it's just like this jacket especially just does nothing for her. So I think we're in agreement there. This I don't know if it's maybe it's suede, but it's like stitched.
I don't know, it's terrible looking.
It is not a great looking thing and does nothing for her. Also, there was at the end, there was a yellow turtleneck that Sabrina wears with like a black dress over it, which wasn't great, but I actually kind of liked because I think it kind of looks more like teeny than some of the other stuff she wears. And if I'm not mistaken, like, she wore this yellow turtleneck, like, all the way back in, like, episode 3. Bit of memory there for you.
I would have given her a better score out if they actually used Chumbawamba.
That is true, yeah. That would have really... Five
that
out
would
five.
Have given me a 5 for
I'm
it.
I'm telling you, go back and watch that scene and play Chumbawamba. It improves it so much more.
I believe it.
That is the episode, Phil. Thank you so much for stopping by again. Always a great time to talk with you about a good episode or a bad episode of Sabrina Teenage Witch. Always fun to have you.
It's always a pleasure to be here, and I love to be invited. So thank you again for the invite.
Absolutely. Anytime, and maybe next time. Who knows? But until next time, I want to say thank you to everybody for listening. You can also follow us everywhere you follow anything, on Instagram at Sabrina's Witch Trials, on Facebook, facebook.com/Sabrina's Witch Trials, and on Twitter at Sabrina Podcast. You can also listen to us everywhere you get your podcasts, from iTunes to TuneIn to Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, podcast section, all your favorite podcatchers. Podcast Addict is what I use on Android. You should give it a try if you're looking for one. And yeah, and of course YouTube. Check us out on YouTube. There's a lot of fun videos going up on YouTube all the time about Sabrina Teenage Witch. What else would there be? Maybe some chilling adventure stuff that comes back in April. But until next time, I want to say thank you to everybody for listening one last time. And until episode 39, which I can tell you is, I believe, Finger Lickin' Flu, which is the episode where Sabrina gets a finger flu of some sort and is incapable of doing magic, and a bit of a teaser, maybe a mortal at Westbridge gets Sabrina's magical powers. But until then, I just want to say thank you, and we will see you in the other realm.
Okay, let's do it again. Sabrina, if you insist on actually doing the cheers, you have to stop screaming, "Please let me die."